on air, WICC 600, online, WICC600.com. Let's stimulate your brain with the Lisa Wexler Show.
And welcome back to the show. 203-333-9422. Well, I woke up this morning to pretty sad news for me in my local area where I live, and this has an impact on people who live in the Norwalk, Westport area. There's a lot of land development going on again now, and I'm paying attention to it because I think that all of us really care about it. For many years, Lucille Lortel, she was a... Oh, Jonathan is here? All right, we'll talk about Lucille Lortel and the White Barn in just a minute, but Jonathan Steinberg will know this story. Jonathan Steinberg, the chair of the Public Health Committee in our legislature, who represents Westport, joins us now. Hey, Jonathan, welcome.
Hi, Lisa. Happy New Year. I haven't talked to you since. Good to talk with you.
I know. Happy New Year. Did you see that the White Barn property is going to be 15 lots? They're going to cut down all those trees. They couldn't save that beautiful property on the border of Norwalk and Westport around Cranberry. Did you see that?
It's really unfortunate. You know, I know a lot of people who worked really hard to avoid that outcome. Real estate values, as you say, are spiking in our neck of the woods. It's very attractive for developers. But that's a loss for our community and our heritage. It's too bad.
It's too bad. It's too bad for the wildlife. They'll probably cut down thousands of trees. It makes me sick. I have to tell you, I'm very upset about it. Anyway, Jonathan Steinberg, welcome to the show today. First of all, on the agenda yesterday, Governor Lamont said he wants to expand his emergency powers through April 20th. Do you have any objection to that? What is your view on that?
Well, you know, among the Democrats, I've been sort of the hard case on this. I would have expected that we would not simply extend the close to 100 executive orders, but that there would be some sort of discerning review of those and determine whether or not some of those needed to be continued. Remember, I want to start by saying we all owe the governor and his people and the experts involved a real debt of thanks. We responded after that initial very unfortunate blip in nursing homes as better, better than most states did to this pandemic. And think of all the decisions they had to make on the fly with all these unknowns. And I know people were frustrated they weren't necessarily quick enough or clear enough initially, but we saved a lot of lives in this state because of the ability of the governor and his people through executive orders to protect us during an emergency. So I'm very appreciative of that. And there are committees, including mine, which are looking at executive orders that in the light of day seem worthy to be codified into statute. Some of them under the concept of an emergency circumstance and some permanent. You know, we talk about telehealth being a whole new frontier now. We have had a lot of learnings about telehealth in the past year, and I foresee statutory changes that will enable this technology to be used more broadly, particularly where there are issues of patient access to practitioners.
Oh, you want to hear something cool about that, Jonathan? I have something cool to tell you. So, one of my family members is on ConnectiCare, right? While, you know, during the COVID time where we increased the ability to enroll, he bought into ConnectiCare. I think he's on the bronze, whatever it is. It's ConnectiCare. You buy into it. It's not an income-based qualification, but there was a period of time during COVID where anybody could buy into ConnectiCare, and one of my family members took advantage of it. But he travels a lot. I just saw in the mail that he now that there is a primary health provider who is being covered by ConnectiCare for telehealth for people in ConnectiCare who are outside the state of Connecticut. That's brand new. That never happened before. And that is a great comfort to people on ConnectiCare because one of the restrictions about it was that you had to be physically located in the state of Connecticut to get anything other than hospitalization covered. Now, if somebody is traveling and they want to, for example, get a prescription for whatever, they can get it filled by this telehealth provider from ConnectiCare. That, to me, is a very positive development since COVID. Very positive.
There are some silver linings in this pandemic, and some of the things that we've learned are included. And we're also hoping that the federal government is cognizant of this and enables through CMS, the federal agency, reimbursements for various types of telehealth services. So that's a perfect example of things that committees are looking at. But by definition, the reason we first authorized the governor to operate via executive orders was, one, the legislature wasn't in session, and two, by its very nature, our process is much slower and more deliberative and wasn't really sufficiently agile or nimble to be able to respond in real time to what was being presented by this pandemic. So now we are in session, and we've fashioned a means by which to do our business, though not everybody loves the idea of doing public hearings via Zoom. We're going to go on with our business. But again, we may be facing the toughest months of this entire pandemic over the next 2 or 3 months because of these variants and because of people's fatigue and expectation of their ability to get their vaccine. So we really have to be willing to trust, as we have in the past, the governor's people to look out for our interests via executive orders. I wanted to review some of the ones that have been on the books that maybe we don't need anymore. But I guess I'm resigned to going along with the plan to extend the executive order emergency authority until April 20th. We have to meet on February 9th, in theory, to either approve or disapprove. I think we could actually choose not to meet and they just stay in place. But that would be for 6 months, and we're not inclined to do that. So we are almost certain to meet on February 9th. This committee of 10, which is the leadership of the four caucuses, plus the chairs and rankings of the public health committee. And I think we will endorse April 20. I will state at that moment that I would like a review of the executive orders such that.
I just want to say this, Jonathan Steinberg, and I know that you're very much, a guardian of democracy, and I appreciate that. So let me just play devil's advocate for a minute. The argument really is that COVID is not going to go away. And one can make the argument, I believe, at any time during the calendar, that these executive orders have already been put in place. Let's just keep rolling with them. I don't know that this pandemic is going to end for a very long time, officially or not. At some point, democracy, I'm just playing devil's advocate with you, but I know that you understand my train of thinking here. At some point, the people elected to do their job have got to be part of the process. We can't keep rolling it over because COVID is not going away.
No, I've been devil's advocate all along as well. And I'm pleased to see the legislature has now figured out a way to do its business and to look at some of these executive orders in terms of extending them. That's the process as it should work. But to your point, we're all presuming that when people get vaccinated, whether it's by summer or by early fall, the pandemic will fall away. And there's no assurance of that, particularly as we see mutations to the virus itself, which create new unknowns, if you will. So conceivably, this could go on for some time. There is a natural tension between the flexibility that we afford the governor's office to get things done in real time and, as per our Constitution, the responsibility of duly elected legislators to do their business. And that's the debate we're having. And the more bills that come forward that are based upon executive orders, I think more that we honor that responsibility. And as I said, I'm seeing that across a good number of committees. We may never be in agreement as to what's the best, if there even is anything approaching an ideal way to share power in this context. This is extraordinary. And this is the public health, protecting the public health, that is very much at a risk. So yeah, I guess we bend over backwards a little bit more than we would because lives are at stake. To afford the governor broad latitude. But you can bet I and others are paying close attention to what they're going forward. There have been close to 100 executive orders at this point. And I still hold out. Have we really looked at all of them in the light of day and determined whether they're all necessary? But I'm actually, some of us are relieved to not be responsible for making some of these hard decisions about businesses and schools and some of these things, because there is no right answer. There are only educated guesses and risk profiles for how best to go about these things. We know we want have to protect the public health, but we also know we want to keep businesses afloat. And we feel tremendous anxiety and pain for both people and businesses in these very difficult times. We'd hate to think that over the period of 2 or 3 months, we don't do the right thing, people might die needlessly, or businesses may go out of business needlessly. That's the hard work we've entrusted to the governor to a large degree. But the legislature is in session. We are doing our job, and we're trying to be reasonable and discriminating about how we go about,
There are a couple of things. We're chatting with Jonathan. Pardon me. There are a couple of things. Jonathan Steinberg, who represents Westport, chair of Public Health Committee, just want to give you a little data. According to Governor Lamont in yesterday's news conference, about 27% of people over the age of 75 in Connecticut have received their first dose. And I wanted to just let you know something, because part of why I love to have you on the show, Representative Steinberg, is to let you know what my audience is telling me every day so that you know this. One of the things that you need to know is that the second shot for people is not uniform throughout Connecticut, and it's a problem. Many elderly people are getting their first shot in local health districts, and they're coming away not with an appointment. They're coming away with a message. You need to get yourself that second shot 4 weeks from today or 3 weeks from today, which is causing anxiety and stress because they go back online and try and do the same thing all over again, and things look full up. And there are other places, Griffin Hospital I know is one, that is automatically giving you a second shot with your first shot. In other words, they're giving you an appointment for your second shot. I just had Martha Zoller on from Georgia, and she says in Georgia, what they're doing is they're reserving enough vaccine for your second shot. You get an appointment. You're told to come back at a certain date. Florida, my parents, the same thing. In Connecticut, it's a problem, Jonathan. You need to know it's a problem. It's a big problem, that second shot. I want you to know that.
I'm very much aware of it, and you bring up a point that I would like to address. Unfortunately, because of the lack of a really effective federal inoculation program and some waffling by the CDC, to be honest, there are two points in which we really created chaos and confusion that might have been less than what we have today. One is that the CDC decided that maybe we just exhaust our inventory, get as many vaccines out there as possible, and would not hold a reserve for a second dose. Unfortunately, that goes against the science. Only now are the manufacturers of these vaccines doing the required clinical tests to determine whether you have sufficient immunity with only one shot. So here we've gone through an entire year of following the appropriate validation process for safety and efficacy, and now we're potentially abandoning it because everybody is in a panic to get their vaccine. I think that was a mistake, and it's undermined our ability to assure people their second shots. Secondly, the CDC, right in the middle of when Connecticut was trying to decide how it was going to do its phase 1B, decided to not just focus on those 75-plus, which is a significant cohort of people in our state, but to expand that to include 65 to 74. That put the state of Connecticut's people who are making these determinations in a very hard spot, which is now we have a tiered 1B, which is, well, what point does 1B even make sense if you have different stages of 1B? Why aren't some of these 1C? Recognizing we can't really do 65 to 74 now because we're just doing the 75 plus. They, again, added confusion into this. And then the third problem is the VAMS system, V-A-M-S, which is what the feds wanted us to use to schedule appointments.
Big problem.
Everybody hates it.
Big problem.
The health districts hate it. The hospitals hate it. Now hospitals are actually transferring the data, this is legal, from VAMS into their own system to assure the right kind of oversight. That also complicated.
No, it's
the VAMS system was supposed to be used so that it would automatically schedule you for a second shot, or at least prompt you for that. And now that's not happening in any way. So one could argue that, but based upon human nature, there was going to be a measure of chaos in this, particularly as decisions were being made on the fly. But the lack of a clear federal oversight and funding, which was a key factor here, to actually implement the administration of vaccines has compounded it. And then the CDC waffling left the states in a very difficult position, defending what they were planning to do. And the fact that each state is operating differently creates more confusion. This could have been avoided with a strong
federal program. Well, I also want to say something else, Jonathan. I also want to say this. To the extent that our state has taken ownership over a lot of doing this pandemic, and they have, they made some good decisions and bad decisions. They made a bad decision not to create enough phone numbers and phone banks for people 75 and over to simply be able to pick up the phone and call and have a human being on the other side to schedule their appointment. And it's not too late. They should be doing it this week. They keep promising.
They
I look at
there are
the...
Gonna be, there are going to be more numbers. There are going to be more people at those numbers. I think they underestimated how many people would need to avail themselves of it. I don't think they fully appreciated how counterintuitive the VAM system was, particularly for older people who might not be all that computer literate. That was a shortcoming, no doubt. They made a mistake on that one. They are trying to rectify it as we speak by getting certainly to have enough people on the lines that they are currently putting out there. You can call to make sure that you're not being kept on hold. You're getting to a live person, and they're actually helping you. And that's a challenge, given the fact that the vaccine supply, which we haven't talked about, is spotty.
Too low.
We're not getting the promised amounts. And until maybe a Johnson & Johnson vaccine comes up, we're not going to see a huge increase. That's frustrating to people. It's frustrating to those we've been charged with inoculating. They don't know how many doses they're going to get. They're promised 1,000 and they get 500. How do you make plans on that basis? How do you not frustrate people who've been waiting patiently for the vaccine and then have to tell them, sorry, we ran out because what was promised was not delivered? Again, I have to lay this on the feds. Warp Speed may have helped us get vaccines, but in every other facet, it's totally fallen down and left states holding the bag.
We're chatting with Representative Jonathan Steinberg. One other thing I wanted to address with you today, which is that the government of Connecticut, for the first time in my recent memory, has a distinct surplus. And if you read the Connecticut Mirror, they will tell you that the reported surplus is really a misnomer. It's really far more than that, because there's a lot more money sort of embedded in extra funds that they can't announce or surplus. And then there are more funds that are going into the rainy day fund that have to be spent. So this is my plea to you. And this is coming to you as an elected representative in the probate court system that deal with families, with children, with real intellectual challenges. The DDS, our DDS in Connecticut, seems to have branched off in terms of servicing between servicing kids with what they call intellectual abilities of an IQ under 69 versus kids that may have sometimes an IQ under 69, sometimes over in the course of 18 years, that have a primary diagnosis of autism spectrum disorder. As a practical matter, a lot of the life skills are a challenge for both of these populations, Jonathan, but it has an enormous impact in terms of whether DDS will fund a budget for day services or group home services for these individuals over the age of 21. And what has happened is, if DDS earmarks you and says you don't qualify under intellectual disability, but rather you qualify under autism spectrum services, the family has to make an application for a different budget line. And I saw a letter yesterday that said that they were full up. Good luck to you. If you have a child emerging at the age 18, 19, 20 that's going to start to need services, if it comes under the category of autism spectrum disorder, they won't take you. They won't even take you in. Forget about giving you a lower budget than you wanted or expected. They're simply full up, which is so grossly unfair, because I'm telling you, as a practical matter, whether they're in category A or B, they need the same kind of 24/7 supervision. They have the same kind, very often, of deficits. I'm not talking about high-functioning autistic kids. I'm talking about low-functioning autistic kids, kids that may, you know, be in the 70s in terms of an overall IQ instead of the 60s, but that differential between 69 and 70 is a chasm. It's an enormous world. And I just want to make a plea on behalf of those families. Jonathan, I know you're in public health. I don't know how the budgets work in Connecticut, but if we have any extra money, somebody needs to take a look at the funding for families with autistic kids, because it's a very big problem and it's just grossly unfair.
Well, Lisa, I'm really glad you shined a spotlight on this, and it's really simply one example of many programs that we know are effective and they help people who are most vulnerable in our state. And they've been severely underfunded. And that's a reflection of, you know, Connecticut's recent history, ever since the recession particularly, that we have been cutting budgets. And, you know, it's interesting how during a pandemic, we've exposed all the weaknesses and gaps in having done that for so many years. And it's led to deaths and tragedies. In this case, you're right. There's a certain pool of money and a line item in the budget, and it is allocated based upon what they the number of people they can afford to help before it's exhausted. And there are many other examples of vulnerable populations who have the same budget issues. And, you know, on one hand, it's a tremendous relief for us to learn via the revenue estimates that we're not nearly in as bad shape as we thought we would be in the coming budget, and we're actually running a surplus. But I want to be cautionary. I've always been a kind of a fiscal moderate, if not conservative, is recognize that the reason why we're in such good shape is because typically income tax revenues, much of which is tied to market returns, stock market returns, was incredibly robust in 2020. Some people say anomalously so. And the question is whether we can use 2020 as an effective benchmark for presuming tax revenues in 2021, which is going to be affecting the second year of the biennial budget. There are a lot of predictions out there that we're in a bit of a bubble. And if we see a market correction and revenues drop, we're not in such great shape. And we will be, even now with the good numbers, we're going to be accessing the rainy day fund. So I would not argue that we're flush and we have to be cautious. But this kind of conversation that we're having now is happening across an entire panoply of programs that the state has underfunded, cut, or eliminated over the past 10 years that we now recognize are critical to people. And those conversations are going to take place primarily in the Appropriations Committee, where that's appropriate, but also in the committees of cognizance. And so that's an ongoing process. So what I would say in response is you and others should advocate on behalf of those individuals who probably can't advocate on their own behalf, and make sure that your legislators, particularly those on the Appropriations Committee, are aware of these things, because this is a moment where we might have a little bit of monetary discretion to supplement or effectively budget for some of these programs that we've been unable to do in the past. It is a moment, it may be an illusory quick moment, but things aren't as bad as we expected them to be right now. Well, we really were talking about severe budget cuts. And then the last kicker is we were very hopeful the federal government, through an extension of the CARES program and a stimulus package, will make the money available to states and municipalities that have been long desired, and will also further ameliorate our budget issues in the state. If that should happen some months from now, it's very hard for us to budget for that, not knowing if it's going to happen. But if that should happen, that will give us another wave of opportunity to look at programs that are deserving.
Thank you very much. Representative Jonathan Steinberg joining us on the Lisa Wexler Show today, Chair of Public Health. You can find him online if you want to reach him directly through the Connecticut website, the portal. He's very easily reached and very accessible. Jonathan, thank you very much for coming back on the show today. Thanks for the catch up. And you be well. Happy New Year.
Anytime, Lisa. Happy New Year to you.
All right. We'll be right back with more of the Lisa Wexler Show coming up.